This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip it.
Good afternoon, this is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. My name is Mark.
Hello there.
Hello, Mark. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
That, of course, is Michael with me in the studio today. We're here to talk tech. Thanks, of course, to Matt just now for the latest in Joy news. And, of course, to the SatMag team for their ever-insightful look at the issues of the day.
Getting everybody ready for the start of the day, they were.
Yes. Beautiful weather out there, too, today.
It is lovely.
If you're not from Melbourne, we're looking at a top of 32 degrees Celsius today, which is quite exciting. And Joy Clock is saying to us, all is well.
Thank you, Joy Clock.
Joy Clock is correct. you can follow Joy Clock if you wish to. Joy949Clock, I think, is the Twitter account. If you're into that sort of thing.
Does Joy Clock tweet greetings like that? You know, reassurances?
Every now and then, I'm not going to use a gender-specific pronoun. I am going to call it they. They are quite...
prolific? Is
yes, I guess is a good word. Now, that's, yes, it is kind of our overlords here at Joy is Joy Clock, because it's everywhere, right?
Joy Clock is omnipresent.
Even in the toilet.
Even in the bathrooms, yes, that's right. Can't escape Joy Clock.
Now, as we pay homage to our overlord, we should actually talk about what we're here to talk about today, and that is technology. Today's show, we'll kick off with a bit of a chat about the Pirate Bay.
Yeah, and
ever popular,
and some developments that will make some people happy and some people very sad.
Of course, Pirate Bay is a very popular torrents site.
Very well known.
Indeed. Malcolm Turnbull is redefining what filtering means.
That should be fun when we have a look at this.
I feel dizzy from all the spinning that's been going on all week
spin,
on this one.
Political spin? Are you suggesting there's spin?
Anyway, we're not going to get government ranty yet. Wi-Fi will be everywhere, but do we want to use it? Now, I think this is in relation to a particular telco that's put up a whole bunch of Wi-Fi hotspots all around the place.
That's right.
Yes, it's exciting news for free Wi-Fi everywhere.
It's exciting opportunities for customers, but with little bewares.
Now, if you're, of course, an Apple or a Google fan, boy or girl or fan person... That's probably a better way to put it, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've got you covered as well.
We're going to do equal rants, are we?
Yes. We tried to give it an equal standing to both major companies. Google, their greater understanding of the transgender community has come out this week, offering new ways to identify yourself or your gender. Apple's antitrust trial is continuing. This, of course, is an antitrust trial against their iTunes service and iPod.
And this has been going on for a while, hasn't it?
Almost a decade, actually.
Wow.
They're calling upon the dead to respond to certain things. So that'll be interesting later on. Google wants to spoon feed you as well, is another... That's the headline. I'm not actually sure what that means. So
I should realize Google wants to spoon you.
It's like, what? That happened this morning, but it wasn't Google, I think. Anyway.
And
Oh, bless. The drum beat has ended, so it is time to move on. If you'd like to contact us while we're in the studio here, you can do so by texting us 0427JOY949. That's 0427-569-949. You can email us on air at joy.org.au. And you can...
Yes, call us.
Call us. I think Mushin is on the front
Mushin
desk.
Mushin is there waiting to take your call.
Mushin is back.
He is.
I love the fact that we have very dedicated volunteers on the front desk, and Mushin has always been with us for quite some time. Very appreciative.
That's right. And if you like talking to a human being on the other end rather than to a message, then
Mushin
give
is your human being.
Yes.
And what else? There's other ways to contact us. If you're listening to the podcast at all, you can contact us during the week at Technogaze on the Twitters. TechnoGaze.
And there's always our Facebook page.
Yep.
Look for Technogaze, Joy 94.9.
We're all over the Facebooks. Indeed. Now, the Pirate Bay.
Arr, meaties.
Yes, now the Pirate Bay has gone offline after a police raid of their server room.
They were turned off.
So the Swedish police have raided the Pirate Bay's data centre on just Tuesday during the week. And since then, the site has gone down and several servers have been seized.
Yeah, as part of a copyright raid.
Mm.
Now, the authorities have been, you know, trying to get Pirate Bay for a long time, and from time to time, Pirate Bay has moved servers and everything else, but they found the secret bunker location.
Mm. And other popular sites, including EZTV and Zoink and Torage, I think is how you say it, also went down at the same time. So it must have been a bit of a haven, that data centre, for such
probably
sites.
Collecting like-minded services.
Hmm. Hmm. And, of course, there's now speculation as to whether these services will return.
Well, I think each of the original Pirate Bay founders are now in jail or have served a prison term. And one of them, I read somewhere, saying that he's sort of not sad that it's done because he thinks the whole public's fairly apathetic about the whole, you know, copyright issue and access and everything else.
Yeah, the comments were along the lines of... so this was a one of the co-founders of the Pirate Bay. He actually said the site has become a bit unwieldy. The design of the site hadn't changed in the past however long. I think it's a decade or so that it's been around.
It's a long time, isn't it?
Which is interesting. It's a good point because, you know, people don't like changes to their sites. The only thing that has changed on the Pirate Bay in particular that he commented on was the fact of more ads.
Okay.
More and more ads. And the explicitness of those ads.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, it's quite confronting, some of the ads that you see when you jump on there. Not
safe for work, are they? Not that you have much experience.
Well, you know, they're ads, so there is a certain amount of safeness to them, but they're very suggestive. And the entire site, like, it's the kind of thing that, you know, it almost prompts you to click in the wrong place just so you do get that click impression. Yes. On that ad. That's really annoying, I find. And there's a lot of services now where, you know, you don't need to worry about the sites anymore. You literally just have an app on your computer, which allows you to, you know, easily browse through the torrents that are available, download them very quickly, like in a very nice, you know, iTunes-like environment where you just
makes it easier and easier.
Yeah, I want this movie.
And no ads.
10 seconds later. Yeah, and no ads and... You know, it's almost like the torrent sites themselves have become irrelevant, in fact, because there's so many of them.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if anybody else picks up the slack in terms of being the, you know, go-to place for this type of content.
Mm, yes. Now, speaking of which, Malcolm Turnbull and of course, he's our communications minister here in Australia, along with our Attorney General George Brandis, have been trying to prosecute a case for, you know, starting to restrict access to sites that offer content
that violate copyright material.
Yeah. And so that's come out this week, and they're talking about now restricting access. So they're basically saying we're going to start blocking, filtering.
But Wayne, didn't the government before the election say they're not going to filter?
So this has been a ongoing thing here in Australia, hasn't it? It's like I think the Labor government, the last Labor government, did propose a filter of some sorts, an actual filter on our internet connectivity, and it was shot down, I think, just prior to the 2010 election, as being, you know, bad. Like, not particularly popular.
And not particularly practical either, I think.
And of course, since this latest government has come in over the past year, both the Attorney General and the Communications Minister have gotten up and said, actually, we want to help the copyright owners, with their plight. And essentially stop or try to reduce Australia's standing in terms of copyright infringement, because we are quite, like, we're one of the most highly populous in terms of ratio.
So per capita
downloaders of copyrighted materials.
You do have to sort of hark back to how we started as a nation, where our roots are.
We're not just pirates, we're Vikings. We're not Vikings. We're convicts, that's
yes,
the word.
That's fine.
Well, I don't think we're, well, some of us were Vikings, I guess. But, yeah. So, now, of course, there's been accusations this week that, oh, you want to block access? Isn't that just like a filter?
But this is the whole comedy thing. Oh, it's a filter. No, it's not. It's a filter. No, it's not. And Turnbull went on and on to saying, listen, it's not a filter.
Now, Scott Ludlam has, of course, gotten up of course, he's the communications spokesperson for the Greens.
Yes,
he's become quite critical of the position of the government. Telco industry veteran John Lindsay.
I love his comment.
It waddles and quacks like a filter. Even Consumer Group Choice have gotten on the bandwagon here. So, what do they have to say?
Oh, they were basically supporting everybody else and saying this is a filter. This is what the common definition of a filter is. And as much as you might call it something else, at the end of the day, it is still a filter.
Yes. Now, as yet, it is not quite known how this non-filter will actually be implemented. We suspect it won't be through the same technology as what was suggested back in 2010, but it may not be. Particularly pleasant. It might use the current mechanism where IP blocking will
occur. But that's a really wide dragnet, because there's a very good chance you are going to have multiple servers serving different content with different websites on the one IP address, and therefore if you block the IP address, you block them all.
Yep. Oh, the other point that Turnbull made is that there is a judicial process that's going to be implemented as part of this, according to what he said this week. So it'll actually be... there'll be an appeals process that the website owners can
use to appeal,
to go through. But, you know, if they're an international, the Pirate Bay-like site, they're not necessarily going to go into the courts here in Australia. So, interesting nonetheless.
Yes.
Now, it is 16 minutes past midday here on Joy 94.9. We're covering some of the latest in technology news here on TechnoGaze. We'll be back with more in a few moments. We love this afternoon here on Joy 94.9.
Especially because it's 26 degrees outside in glorious Melbourne.
Mm-hmm. It's a glorious Melbourne. You know, sometimes we have really really poor weather here in Melbourne, but when we have great weather, we love to talk it up, don't we?
That's because there are days when it's not so great. Never mind.
True.
Now, Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is almost getting to the point where it literally is everywhere in terms of being able to access it no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of ISPs that are able to offer this piggybacked on some of their customer equipment.
Yes. Yes.
So there's a very large ISP in the States called Comcast, and they have sort of many, many customers. And, of course, they, install the router, modem, Wi-Fi access point in somebody's home.
Yeah.
And they also share it to Joe Blow, who's passing in the street, who can log on with their Comcast account and get access to Wi-Fi no matter where they are, which is great.
And this is a trend amongst a lot of ISPs here in Australia. I think the big telcos here are looking to do the same thing. In most cases, what I've heard about so far in Australia is an opt-in process. So if you have a Telstra access point or a Telstra router in your home,
like a Big Pond broadband node,
you
yeah.
can choose or not choose okay. to sign up to this deal. And in fact, I think it's almost like if you want to be a customer that can roam around on other people's,
you have to share
routers,
as well.
You have to, yeah. So it's like a peer to peer of access points or something like that.
Yes, it does give flexibility because it means that yes, they've got infrastructure in these houses. They don't need to put something extra out in the streets.
Yeah, yeah, and that's utilizing exactly like all the stuff that's already out there. It's yeah.
Sounds great in theory, but there's a mother and daughter in California who aren't happy about this after they discovered this.
Yeah, so the mother and daughter are actually suing the US provider Comcast, as they never actually gave permission for Comcast to do to enable their access point. They've actually said that the hotspot is unauthorized intrusion into their private home, in fact. So this almost a virtual thing, being a hotspot, is
well, it's intangible.
Intruding
it's intangible.
On their,
can't really touch it.
Well,
it doesn't, yes.
It's. I guess it's this. Might turn into a metaphysical debate here, but we're talking radio waves here, right? So I guess they're physical in a sense.
Just because you can't see them, then yes, true.
Apparently, according to the lawsuit as well, the Comcast service places a vast burden on electricity bills. Yeah, okay, maybe. Opens them up to attacks by hackers. Yes,
maybe.
Actually, I think that's there's a bit more legitimacy to that particular argument myself. It also degrades their bandwidth, which it
probably does because it's obviously drawing from the same bandwidth, and you don't know what strangers are doing sitting outside of your house.
This one depends on the implementation by the provider, actually, because if you implement it well, you would ensure that whatever bandwidth is required by the primary customer, as in the person who's
gets
paying
priority.
For the account, always gets priority to anything that comes through on this public access point. But you know how that works is a whole different story. But when bandwidth is you know pretty unlimited anyway, it's like
if you do have plentiful bandwidth out to these devices, then it probably is less of an issue.
Mm.
But
if we all had fiber, it wouldn't be in.
Comcast is a cable TV provider.
Right.
So they're providing cable. And my understanding for delivering internet over cable is that speed does degrade the more users that you have with it. So it is fairly...
Particularly in a grouped fashion. Yeah, I was actually doing some research on this during the week. And I remember doing it back when cable first came out here in Australia as well. It's you're basically grouped into cable customer sort of, I can't remember what the term is, but it's you know, you don't just get your own pipe. So with fiber, for example, you get your own in theory, you get your own line to the node,
right.
Or the exchange.
Yes.
Whereas with cable, it's shared.
You're piggybacked onto a line. Yes.
Yeah. So you could argue in that case for a Comcast customer over in the US, if they're on cable, they're already sharing their bandwidth with other customers anyway. So what's the difference to someone just sitting on the other end of an access point or another the Wi-Fi point? So yeah, it's actually highlighting the fact that though that Comcast is externalising the costs of its national Wi-Fi network back onto customers.
But at the end of the day, they are providing the equipment.
Right.
The customer does provide the electricity, and I really don't think it's vast.
Mm.
But for me, the question really is, and I'm sure that in the contract that they've signed with Comcast, it says somewhere in the fine print that they're going to do this, or they potentially may do this, and they've accepted that. So for me, the issue really is, what is the definition of informed consent, and can somebody like Comcast rely on fine print to say, oh, we've told the customer and they've agreed to it? You know, just because it's there doesn't necessarily mean that it's been read and, you know, accepted. So interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So it's yeah, and now it's becoming more and more of a thing here in Australia. What with Telstra now offering Wi-Fi, and you can see them. And if you walk around the streets of the CBD or certain well built up areas,
they've popped up. Yeah,
they're putting good use to the payphones that are sitting there, you know, around Melbourne.
So these payphones are now in addition to obviously having a payphone, they've got a Wi-Fi access point?
Yeah, they've got a little cube that sits on top.
Is this the purple cube?
Yes. And they appeared not about a couple of weeks back, but they weren't well identified, and we kind of heard rumours about Telstra offering this new service. So everyone kind of concluded that these little cubes sitting on top of payphones were going to be the Wi-Fi access points. Now they have actually got the little Wi-Fi symbol on them. So it's like, hello, I'm here.
Somebody went round one night putting the stickers on. So that means if you are a Big Pond customer and you've opted in to do this, you can actually log onto that with your account and use that part of your bandwidth while you're out on the road.
Yeah. So of course, the thing to be concerned about, though, is that these are public Wi-Fi access points, right? They are potentially not as secure as your own home internet connection.
My understanding is that they're open access points, so there's no WPA security on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because having WPA security means you've got to put in a password, and then it gets more difficult to put in a password to connect onto it,
mm-hmm.
which means it's exactly the same as when Google were going past, you know, mapping the streets, and they were listening to people's open Wi-Fi, so those people that didn't have access points. Anybody theoretically can listen in onto your traffic once you're connected if you're not running a HTTPS session.
Yes. So it's good practice with any internet use these days to use a secure encrypted connection.
That's right. We just got a message from Dave. Hi, Dave. And he's basically glad that, you know, the old payphones have been put to have come back with a second life and been put to further use.
Because this is the thing, like, there's now an SMS function. Like, I haven't used a payphone for ever since I got a mobile phone, really.
No, that's not that.
But you can SMS from payphones these days. So what's a good use for anonymous SMSing?
Oh, really?
I don't know. Dave, you've got some ideas. Not sure if we should spruik them on air, but
maybe
apparently
not. They're
well used for underworld activities.
I wouldn't even know how much a phone call in a public phone box would be these days. So there's a security issue with that. I read somewhere that somebody suggested as an easy way to have a WPA password, even if you know it's shared amongst everybody, is in your SSID name, the name that you give to the access point, you put in brackets, like the access point might be called Joy, and then in brackets you say password is Joy.
Oh, okay.
So the benefit of that is you establish then an encrypted session between your computer and the access point.
But it's still publicly available.
It's publicly available, but at least that part of the conversation is encrypted.
Yeah. There's certain, I don't know, you need to be careful about what's encrypted, or like what you define as being encrypted as well. Like, there's certain vulnerabilities for most encryption algorithms these days that you should be wary of.
WPA hasn't been cracked.
Okay.
WEP, WEP, if anybody's using WEP, please change to WPA. Because, WEP was done a while ago, but that was purely because of a bad implementation.
Right.
Rather than cryptography itself.
Yeah.
Now...
It is 26 minutes past midday here on Joy 94.9. Should we just do one last one, which is related to the topic?
Yes.
5G.
What's 5G? What's 4G?
That's a very good question. So apparently 5G is, I guess, the next generation of mobile service that will be made available across the world. So we've got 4G now, which is a culmination of what LTE what's the other one that used to be
around? That's the thing. What's the other one? There are two different, you know, definitions of 4G and frequencies. It's all confusing.
So apparently today 4G accounts for 5% of all global connections. 5G though is becoming a new thing. It's often funny how technology companies try to, you know, label a whole bunch of protocols and systems and models of hardware as a single thing like 4G, when in actual fact it doesn't really sort of, it could be, you know, a whole bunch of different.
I think it's a lot easier to market than what HSDPA or something like that. It's just, you know, from an acronym point of view, and where you do have multiple competing standards that are offered by different carriers and different phone vendors, that is just much easier to bundle it as one. You know, 5G is the next best thing. It's better and faster than 4G.
Yeah. So there's been a global carrier industry association is trying to define the new standard as GSMA. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, I believe it's the name of the global organization.
Right.
Yeah, so I think what's happening is that from a technology perspective, you've got all these manufacturers that came up with the next generation pieces of hardware.
Mm.
And the industry as a whole is trying to agree on what is the definition of 5G. And they've set some parameters regarding speeds. So they said anything from between 1 and 10 gigabits mm-hmm. per second, which is pretty fast.
Wow.
Over the air.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
And much, much higher density in terms of 100 times more connections to one of their nodes than is available today on current technology.
Now, this is quite important for this thing called the Internet of Things, isn't it? Where we're going to have many more devices
exactly.
around us connecting wirelessly to services. And today it's done through, you know, like you've got your Fitbits, for example, that connect via USB dongle that then connects out to
through your phone,
you know, through your internet yeah. connection or whatever. Perhaps these devices, these internets of things, will actually be connecting directly to the internet.
And then because they're not always going to be with you, if they're attached to your curtains, for instance, to measure the sunlight coming in so that the curtains know when to close, then you're not going to be there the whole time.
True.
And this is one of the reasons why GSMA have also said that in terms of the Internet of Things, we must have a 10-year battery life for Internet of Things devices before this is going to work.
Wow.
And this is part of the standard.
Lofty goals here. We're also talking 100% coverage
that's perceptible. They're saying from a person's perspective, you should always have coverage.
Right.
Now, that's going to have to be in metropolitan suburban areas. There's no way that you can say that in country areas, especially in Australia.
Yes, the entire Australia is going to be covered. It's interesting the way that they're moving forward, but it's always a bit ambiguous when new technologies come about and what will 5G actually be.
And I guess it is, like you said, a bit of a wish list.
Mm, yes.
Time will tell.
Indeed. We'll give it time. You're listening to TechnoGaze. We'll give you a bit more time to take a breather. If you're looking to contact us, you can do so by SMSing us 0427JOY949. You can email us on air at joy.org.au as Daryl and who is our other lucky
Dave.
SMS Dave have done. Thank you both for your messages. We'll be back with more in a few moments. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology, gadgets, and consumer electronics. My name is Mark. With me in the studio is Michael.
That is me. What was that urgent rush of voice?
I just wanted to turn to presenter mode, I guess. Would I be good on Sale of the Century? Is that even a show anymore? I don't think it is.
What do I win? What do I win? What's behind the curtain?
There are no curtains up here in the Joy Studios.
We're exposed.
We're very exposed. There's some excellent training going on in the other studio right now. What with the new technology that's going on here at Joy.
That's right. The introduction of computers into all of the studios.
Well, let's be clear. We have had computers here for a while now.
Well, computers that do certain jobs.
In particular, the playout system. So we've had the
yes,
amazing... It's all in all three studios now, so we're very happy about that, and that is a good thing.
It's nice to have consistency mm-hmm. across the studios.
Mm-hmm. And yes, indeed. Now, Google.
Google is following on the steps of Facebook and OkCupid.
Have we got a name for Google fan people?
Aren't they...
Fugles?
Fugles?
I think... Yeah, Fugles.
Yeah,
we'll go with Fugles.
We'll go with
Fugles.
Fugles. So, Google... Yeah, you know, this is a growing trend in the recognition of the transgender community.
Yes, or the trans X community, perhaps, I think is part of the naming of it. Not necessarily about transgender so much, but in this particular case, it is actually about how you identify your gender on Google. And OkCupid have recently done this, as have Facebook, after a bit of an uproar on the Facebook side of things. Google, on their Google Plus service, are now offering more options than just male and female for their gender definition.
You can, yes, that's right. You can select other and then define
however
you want to present yourself.
With a free text box. So you can say, I am X.
That's right. And quite. As well as that, now this is the interesting thing. The article that I read said that you can also specify the pronoun that you want Google to use when referring to you, because Google has circles and it's like in his circles or their or her circles or their circles.
Yes,
which is fantastic.
It's always an assumption, though, isn't it, that the pronouns used in a, that is male or female is he or she, right? So
when you limit the choice to two, then yes, it's going to be like that.
And often, you know, social networking is all about explaining what people have done or will do or whatever. So there's always use of pronouns. You know, the example being writer post on his her wall when they, you know, when they just become friends. For example. So it's good to be able to define your own.
That's right.
Now, you could be quite funny with it too, couldn't you?
You could. I tried it because they're progressively rolling this out, and it was went into my Google Plus page and I was able to change, you know, select other for gender and type into the box what I want. Mm-hmm. When it came down to the pronoun, it was other, but no box opened up. So I'm not sure whether it's part of the rollout or there's an issue.
Perhaps say the other is just the use of the word they and the non-gender specific.
I thought that was going to be customizable as well.
Mm.
Whatever it is, it's heading in the right direction, and I think there's going to be more and more recognition that, you know, life isn't as binary as what we've all assumed it has been in the past. Mm.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah, it's good. I think in general, like the trans community, you know, coming of... you know, it's becoming more apparent that we need to address these issues. So it's good that big tech companies in particular, because, you know, they have become such a big part of our lives today, are enabling this type of definition of something that is quite personal to a lot of people.
And being representative of their user base.
Mm. Yes. It's yay for technology. Where's the applause button?
Oh,
somewhere.
On a different screen.
Yes, indeed. So they're rolling it out progressively on the Google profile basic information, Google Plus profile basic information page.
Yes.
Mm, very good.
Now, what else are Google doing?
Google?
Actually, they're buying companies. I must say, this next story, Google did not do this themselves. They've recently bought a company called Lyft Labs. And Lyft Labs have come up with a spoon for use by people who have got Parkinson's. So a Parkinson's sufferer shakes a lot.
Yes.
And obviously, it would be very hard if you're trying to feed yourself with a shaking hand to hold a spoon steady.
Yep.
So what Lyft Labs did, and now we probably should call them Google, is they've invented a spoon that's basically got like little motors in it that compensate for your shaking hand.
Right.
To, it's like a steady cam for your spoon. It keeps the spoon steady.
Wow.
Which means that sufferers of, you know, any sort of disease where their hand shakes means that they can continue to longer to feed themselves.
It's often the case with, you know, particularly degenerative type diseases like Parkinson's, you know over time it becomes worse, that self-sufficiency is a really important factor for patients, right? They tend to, if they can be more self-sufficient in their lives, it's able to, you know, prolong the
it prolongs their independence, and yeah. Independence is something that, whether it's older people as they age, or whether it is people who are suffering, you know, like you said, degenerative disease, mm. Independence is something that's like almost the final insult. You know, it's bad enough I've got this, but I lose this independence.
Yeah.
And technology is playing a huge part in making a whole group of people being able to look after themselves for longer and become more independent for longer.
Mm. And it's quite a simple thing too, isn't it? The ability to eat. And so
it's a basic thing, yes.
This is an amazing feat. Yeah. Again, yay technology.
Now, I think Google's reason behind purchasing this is probably a little bit personal, because Sergey Brin's mother, in fact, is a Parkinson's sufferer.
Oh, okay.
And in a lot of the work that Google X Labs are doing, they are involved around the health area.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a sign that the Google founders are getting older and they're wanting to extend or improve their
I believe with life. Parkinson's in particular, there's a genetic disposition towards it. So a certain mutation in the genes is something that means you're more likely to get it at an older age. So Sergey Brin's mother having it, there's potentially
That affects more. Right.
But, if it affects, if that's the personal story that gives rise to the research that enables this to become a,
more widely available
technology,
then fantastic.
Why not?
Yeah, I agree.
I think, we are all humans in the end. It's got to be a good thing.
I need the song.
Which song is that?
We're All Human.
Oh, right.
The tune popped into my head. I won't sing it.
Oh, I was hoping for it. I don't actually know the song you're talking about.
Okay. I'm definitely not going to sing it.
Bless.
Now, Google are also making a change to plugins in their Chrome browser.
Yes.
They're getting rid of them.
Google Chrome, of course, is the web browser that Google have been creating for quite some time now. And they have decided that, back in the day, so Netscape, back in the 90s, actually pioneered the idea of plugins for browsers. So these are things that you can just install as add-ons or extra bits that change the browser behavior in a certain way that enables you to customize it for your own personal use.
So third parties can write software that integrate with the browser.
Yes.
And that became a de facto standard amongst the different browser vendors, so that if you're a company that made an add-on for Mozilla, or Netscape, you could then put it into IE or somewhere else.
Chrome. Yep. Now, actually, as a web developer, I've found that the need for plugins has always been there, because often the ability to analyze what's going on in a web page when you're trying to figure out what's going wrong is quite limited with the, quote, out-of-the-box, unquote...
Tools.
It's gotten better recently, but back in the day, Internet Explorer 6 days, for example, the ability to figure out what the hell was going on your page that you've just very nicely put together is not easy. So the fact that plugins existed enabled a better ability for us to fix things. Same goes for today. The one that comes to mind is a social media. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a social media plugin that clears out all the crap that you don't want to see on say Facebook, for example.
Or removes the ads and things like that.
Possibly that, and possibly just makes it a much more pleasant site to use.
Now, Google removing support for this because it is an old technology. Architecturally, it is old and has some security issues.
Mm-hmm.
And supporting more modern technologies.
What, such as?
Do you want me to name them?
Yeah, I don't know.
I've got to move my eyes into the right part of the page to do that.
Now, starting in January, Chrome will start to block the plugins by default, with the exception of a small few. I wonder what those small few will be.
I think that the ones that they're keeping initially are, there's a lot of people still using Microsoft Silverlight, which is a Netscape plugin format.
That needs to die.
The things are, the other two plugins that are still quite in use, which I like, are Google Talk and Google Earth.
Well, if it's got the name Google in front of it, then it's going to be allowed. Okay, fair enough.
And Facebook Video Chat currently uses it, but I think each of these do have a different standard, a more modern standard to go into, and it's a way of forcing user base to move off older technology.
Indeed. Speaking of moving off older technology, we're moving on here on TechnoGaze. That was a really bad segue. Mark and Michael here with you in the studio. We'll be back with more in a few moments.
TechnoGaze.
This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. Mark and Michael with you in the studio here. We're coming towards the end of the show, but it is 16 minutes to 1 here on Joy.
We run out of time always.
Mm-hmm. But we do have a bit more to cover.
We do indeed.
What's this? Rest in peace password. So the concept of a password, of course, is the thing that you type in when you want access to a system. And there's talk about the major IT giants, the likes of Google, Microsoft, Apple, and so forth. They've agreed to share patents.
Not Apple. Apple are not coming to the party with this one.
this. So, unsurprising there, I guess. But so the others have agreed to share patents. Of course, one of the problems in the IT industry in general is the fact that patents exist on software concepts, on the concepts that are implemented in software. So all these companies have different patents, which are essentially say that they are the only ones who can implement these things
in a certain way.
In a certain way.
And pay me money if you want to use it.
And this come to, you know, it, of course, the famous one is the one-click buy function of, what was it, Amazon, I think it was?
I think it was Amazon.
So the ability to just click once and you immediately have that item sent to you without any intervention whatsoever, as long as obviously they've got your details. That was a patent that was owned by Amazon, and therefore other sites weren't allowed to use the same sort of feature.
Without coughing over some money for the use of their patent.
Mm. And it's rife. It is across the board. Like, all major companies have patents of one sort or another. And
it's like an asset base. You can't have, especially a software company these days, without a treasure trove of patents to use as a bargaining chip to offer somebody else who takes you to court over, you know, violating their patents. We do a swap.
One of the, and of course, one of the blockers for two-factor authentication, which is a concept we've talked about here on Joy on TechnoGaze over the past few months. Two-factor authentication is basically saying you have two things that are that enable you access to a system. Say you want to log on to Google, you need to know potentially your password, but also you need to have in possession something that enables you to also access that.
That so, identifies you.
So the example for Google, and I've implemented this myself, is I have to have a phone that is connected to a particular number, as in my mobile number, which I've identified in the system. So I've given them my mobile number.
That's right, yes.
In order for me to log on to a new computer that I've never logged on to Google with before, I need to, A, know my password, and B, mm-hmm. have the number, have the phone in my hand so that they can text me another code
that you put onto the screen.
Yeah. So that's an idea of two-factor auth. And there's other concepts of it. Often for corporate systems, you'll get a little dongle, a little sort of keyring type thing, which has a number that rotates. And that's, again, something that you possess.
And then you put a PIN number against that, so it's something I know, something that I have. This really is me.
And a password as well. Suddenly, yep. that's almost
you've got access.
Three-factor authentication. But, yeah.
But there are lots of different ways of implementing it.
Indeed.
But there's no standard.
No standard.
So far.
One of the blockers for that was, of course, the patents that were held by all the IT giants.
And get everyone to the table to talk about it and to agree on the standards.
So Microsoft, Google, ARM, PayPal and Lenovo have all gotten together to form the FIDO Alliance.
Woof.
Oh, that's such a cute name. They've published specs for common standards for manufacturers to build two-factor auth and biometric login systems that will work across a variety of devices. The final drafts of these specs will cover two separate login systems, the Universal Authentication Framework and the Universal Second Factor. And of course, there's some amazing TLAs for that one, three-letter acronyms,
yes.
UAF and U2F.
I wonder whether the band's going to sue.
Yes, I didn't take into account the trademarks that may be held by certain people. Patent licensing will be shared amongst the members, so no expensive royalty payments will be required.
So now we're probably going to see some standard ways in terms of implementing biometrics, for instance, on laptops and desktops and mobile phones, that is going to be available to a whole host of manufacturers, except for Apple.
Indeed. Yes.
So will they come to the party?
Oh, doubtful. They always want to do things their own way.
They always have their own parties.
Including, they also have been embroiled here in Australia in a federal court ruling against their appeal. So they, Apple, have of course tried to trademark the words App Store.
Ah.
So we're talking about the two words, App Store. Back in March last year, the Registrar for Trademarks here in Australia rejected Apple's claim on the phrase App Store. Apple appealed that ruling However, Justice David Yates of the Federal Court said that Apple has not established that because of the extent of to which it has used the trademark before the filing date, it does distinguish the designated services as being Apple services. So that's legal speak for...
You ain't getting it?
Well, A, you're not getting it, and B, it's a generically used term, right? So Google use it for their offerings for mobile services.
But they've also called their store now the Play Store.
But I think that's perhaps to get around other jurisdictions and their trademarks. Because the thing about trademarks is that they exist
national,
in a global sense. They exist just on a jurisdictional basis. So
because Apple do have trademarked the App Store in certain markets, I think in the US as well.
Yes. Now, unsurprisingly, Microsoft were actually one of the entities that objected to the trademark being awarded to Apple. So good on Microsoft, because they are the underdogs in the mobile, particularly the app world.
Definitely the... not as underdog as BlackBerry, let's say.
Black who? As a result of the appeal being rejected, Apple was told that they actually had to pay the registrar's court costs, which means that there's estimates being bantered around that the total cost of that appeal to Apple have come to between $100,000 and $200,000.
I should have done law instead of IT at uni, shouldn't I?
That's probably just some intern filing papers, I suspect.
It's one expensive form.
Mm-hmm. Apple do, however, hold an Australian trademark for the term App Store, which is all one word. So if ever you see the word App Store being used in just one single word fashion, Apple are legitimately able to hold the rights to that term.
Where a space makes a big difference.
Yes. Bless. Yay for Apple.
Now, in more Apple news.
Yeah. Steve Jobs has
come back to life, so to speak.
He has. Now, I'm sure I had this...
A little bit higher than where you were.
Oh, right. I skipped past it, did I? Wait, I'm confused
this
now.
This is one of the problems of using electronic media to, you know, store our show notes on rather than old-fashioned pieces of paper like I used to do.
I'm lost. I'm completely lost. You'll have to tell us about this one. So,
well, there's been a long... the antitrust, which is the competition... trial that's been happening with Apple for the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
are pulling out evidence of the examples of how they were basically stifling competition.
Ah, yes.
And bits of their evidence is Steve Jobs.
Yeah, so he made a deposition back in 2011, just before he passed away of pancreatic cancer, which has been used as evidence in this particular case. Both the transcript and the video itself has been submitted as evidence.
And this was obviously to support Apple's case.
Or was it basically questioning under testimony?
Perhaps, under whatever it's called.
Perhaps the video needs to be released in order for us to find out. I assume that anything that Steve Jobs would have said during the course of a deposition, which is a pretty important part.
Okay, so deposition is questioning, yeah.
Would be used in support of Apple's case. But so the iTunes antitrust trial has been continuing on. Press heavyweights, Bloomberg, CNN, Associated Press, they've all requested that the Oakland, California court publicly releases the video recording of the deposition. And in fact, a 27-minute excerpt of the deposition was used in the evidence. So the press are actually arguing that the video should be released based on the First Amendment grounds that exist across in the US.
Do you know why they're not releasing it?
Well, First Amendment is all about free speech, right?
Yes.
So how does this directly equate to free speech? Is it perhaps that there's a general public interest in this particular speech being made free? I don't know.
Or that it's wrong to stifle what someone said, but I don't know.
Now, Apple, of course, have argued against the release of the video on the grounds that there is no First Amendment right for any member of the press or the public to obtain a recording of live witness testimony. It's also perhaps good taste. Like, he has passed away.
I think there's that side of it, but as a general principle in law, you know, many people make video depositions.
Yes.
are that should they be publicly accessible? Just because it's Steve Jobs, who's a well-known person, you know, if it's Joe Blow from the street doing it, do you then say, oh, let's publish everything that's said? So,
now, this iTunes antitrust case is about the alleged behaviour of Apple, where they actually apparently were deleting or not keeping the music of rival stores, music stores,
on the
devices of people who bought Apple devices. So it's been ongoing for the past 10 years. It's actually at a point now where it's at risk of falling apart because the plaintiffs that have been nominated for the case didn't actually own iPod devices during the time in which this alleged behaviour occurred. So it seems like they're weaving their way out of this one, I suspect.
Yeah, it's a very... They're getting down to, you know, ownership, and which I guess is fair enough if you bring the case.
Now, let's weave ourselves out of this particular show here on Techno Gaze. It's coming up to 4 minutes to one on Joy 94.9. We'll wrap up the show in a few moments.
Techno Gaze. Australia's most amazing gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
We are pretty amazing here on Joy 94.9, aren't we?
Even if we do say so ourselves, we are.
We are the most amazing gay and lesbian radio station because we are the only gay and lesbian radio station.
In Australia.
Where that's pretty amazing in itself, actually. Big thank you to both Daryl and
Dave
for SMSing in. Sorry, we didn't read out your message earlier, Daryl. We didn't mean to neglect. It's just the timing of it all.
That's
the
right.
Context
sometimes
is gone. I'm sorry. I do apologise. Of course, it's coming up to the end of the show, and straight after our show, of course, Pete Dillon will be on for Cravings, talking food.
Do we have a quick last story?
Yes, of course we do.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Tim Berners-Lee, the father of the World Wide Web, who said that politicians should learn to code because that way they'll be able to make better decisions about laws affecting technology.
Yes.
Well, Barack Obama has heeded his advice and is now dubbed the coder-in-chief. Americans do like these titles. President Obama attended a Hour of Code event, which is designed to show, you know, what can be achieved with 1 hour's tutorial of programming. And his achievement was a one-line Java program that said, move forward 100 to move this little graphics object on the screen.
So
well done, President Obama.
Pre-canned little graphics object that all he had to do was type in the words.
Do not belittle the efforts of people who are trying to learn something new.
Well, it's Java, so I'm surprised it even worked in the first place. I am biased. That's all we have time for in today's show. If you would like to peruse previous episodes or perhaps just check out what we've done in the past, you can do so by going on to joy.org.au/technogaze. As I mentioned before, we've got a new Joy News Bulletin coming up next, but straight after that, Pete Dillon with Cravings. Thank you very much, Michael, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jono, get well soon. Hopefully you can join us for the next week's show.
That'd be great.
My name's Mark. Catch you next week.
Have a good weekend.
Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.